mansion, the final fire, and the transfer of mystical wisdom. The prayer of entry. I cross the bridge into the silent bliss of my interior castle, and I enter the sixth mansion. I close the drawbridge and forbid all outside influences from entry into this holy place that is my soul. I am alone with God, and under God's light and companionship, I discover the depth and beauty of my soul. I embrace the power of prayer, and I open myself to divine guidance. I surrender myself to become as a channel for grace, healing, and service as God directs my life. Remember, in this state of prayer, nothing can be seen. Not in the ordinary seeing anyway, not even in the imagination. That's what Teresa wrote in the Sixth Mansion. Teresa, as you know, wrote during the Spanish Inquisition. And when you read her writings, oftentimes she would say, "But what does a poor woman like me know?" She had to hide her intelligence, hide her genius, because during the Inquisition it would have brought the devil to her door and it could have resulted in her being burned at the stake. But now, in this mansion, she strutted her genius. Here in this mansion, she comes forward and she says, "Now, you need to know certain fundamental truths about this journey of yours. This journey toward illumination, this journey of illumination, this is the most authentic journey that the soul will ever take. And in fact, the soul doesn't take the journey, the soul is the journey." When you hear words like this, you hear them and you are separate from the journey because it's so difficult to comprehend becoming a journey unto yourself. Becoming one with the whole of your life because you are so accustomed to the pain or the struggle or the paradox or the dilemma, the unnameable dilemma of being separate from your own life. It is the crisis within you that you can't really pinpoint. And yet what that crisis is the misalignment with your soul, the inability to access that depth within yourself and release all that it is that you are. All of the great teachers who say, "Know thyself." That is the greatest mystical command. Know thyself. And if you ponder that intellectually, you'll go nowhere. Because it is not an intellectual command. Know thyself is no command that can be even tampered with by the mind. Because how far will you go with that? Here's my name. Here's my address. Know thyself with the mind will go the distance of your driver's license, your academic degree. And it reflects nothing of why you were given the journey of life and commanded to descend upon this earth. It reflects nothing of the gifts that are in your soul or even your capacity to understand what is a gift in the soul. You don't think about that. You don't comprehend the whole meaning of what it is to have a gift in your soul. You think of that as poetry because that's the extent of the use of that phrase. You have yet to animate the light of that within you. And so here in the sixth mansion, You sit and ponder. Is God the goal, or am I? Am I the goal, or is God? Because in the lower mansions, in the ordinary spiritual life, the world that I am inviting you out of, you are the goal. And that goal leads you nowhere. It leads you to wounds. It leads you to disempowerment. Empowerment toward wounds is no empowerment at all. Empowerment toward you can have things is no empowerment at all. Empowerment toward the capacity to serve others without attachment, without the need for praise, without the need to take, that's empowerment. To be able to follow instruction without needing someone else's approval for who you are, that's empowerment. That is deep empowerment. To be strong enough to have the stamina to be of service to another human being without fearing what will they say if, that is empowerment. And that does not come from stuff, I can assure you. And the largest bank account in the world will never give you that quality of self-esteem. Never. Impossible. It will never buy you the level of mystical courage or illumination that comes from one experience of God in the walls of your soul. Never. It's not possible. It will never give you the authority, humble authority, that comes from the experience of knowing, not wondering, not studying, not pondering, not thinking about, but knowing deep in your soul, deep in your interior castle, that you in fact are immortal, that you in fact are on a path that is so directed that no matter what happens in the world around you, you need not negotiate the quality of your integrity, the quality of your character, the quality of who you are for your own survival. If that is not liberation, I do not know what is. So I repeat, as Teresa said, are you the goal or is God? That is the question you hold in your soul as you pursue your work in the sixth mansion, always looking, no, God is the goal. I am not the goal any longer. I am not the goal any longer. And for someone in the lower mansions, that is a terrifying thought. How can I not be the goal? What happens to me if I'm not the goal? I have to be the goal because what happens to my I-ness? I mean, where will I go if I'm not the goal? Will I evaporate? I mean, where will I be? Like, what will happen to me if I'm not the goal? I mean, what are you saying? And that's the ego screaming for survival. Fear not, you aren't going to evaporate into nothingness, but what will happen is that sense of fear, and all that comes from your fear, that evaporates. And the I that emerges is your divine I. You're not going to evaporate and go nowhere. Don't be ridiculous. But the I within the soul comes forward. That's a whole different sense of who you are. Know thyself, that's who you are. That's who you are. It is the person who comes forward when the mystic undergoes the transformation known as initiation and comes forward and says, I am no longer Francis, but Francis of Assisi. I have named my soul. I have named the divine authority in me. I am no longer Teresa, I am Teresa of Avila. And you are naming your soul. You're not losing yourself. You are claiming yourself. This journey of illumination, make no mistake, people, does not call you into hermitage, does not call you into your little retreat spas so you can go take care of yourself. You are not the goal. God is, and when God is the goal, service is the goal. Service. Others. What is a common theme is self-exhaustion. Oh my, taking care of others has just burned me out. How can taking care of another person burn you out if you know how to do it? If you know how to genuinely care. If you know how to genuinely love. If you know how to genuinely look through the eye of the mystic, look through the lens of the divine without judgment and detachment, how could your instructions from God burn you out? They may fill you with flame, but they will not burn you out. When I hear people say, caring for another burns me out, I think to myself, well then, what is it about love you know nothing of? Because you obviously aren't doing it right. And what I understand is that they are looking to others to fill in a place, or they are looking and helping others through wounds, or they are bitter and they have not understood their own life journey, or they are deeply angry with God, with the emptiness in their own life, and they are deeply angry that their expectations are not being met, and they are consumed by their own victim. And they simply cannot hear the inner direction. They simply cannot hear it. And above all, they have not surrendered. They have not said, you know what, if this is where you want me, then let me be of highest service, but my ego is incapable of this. Let me be very clear. The power of my ego can't do this anymore. I cannot handle this anymore. I need to pull from a force much greater than me, and I cannot do this alone. I need to be illuminated. This is more than my five senses can handle. I need to enter my soul. I need the companionship of my soul, or I will collapse under what is being asked of me. I do not want to run away. I do not want to abandon where you've placed me, but this is greater than I can handle. That is your response. Your response is not, oh, I am so burned out. Your response is, wait a minute. There are gifts in my soul I have not tapped. And when we speak of gifts in the soul, we speak of light yet to be tapped. And that light is not self-serving. That light serves you when you serve others. That is the nature of the soul. It does not belong to you. It is all yours so that it can serve another. It is totally yours, but it is a vessel of service. That is the nature of the soul. That is what every great spiritual master has told humanity, has absolutely exemplified for humanity, or they would not be the great masters that they are. They were masters of what? Service. They were not masters of isolation. Even when they wanted to be isolated, their light was so great, the disciples found them in the woods, in the caves. You cannot hide a soul that has ascended to illumination. You can't. You simply can't. And those gifts that come alive in you do not belong to you. They are not for you to hide like Midas and store away for what? What are you going to do with gifts by yourself? What are you going to do with them? No. These are for you to bring to others. And there is a huge missing, gaping hole in contemporary spiritual literature. It is self-serving. It is not a route to God. Sufficiently, deeply enough. It is a route to wounds, where God serves your wounds, where God serves your healing. What is that about? God, heal me, and what? And now what are you going to do once you're healed? Where's the rest of the book? And why do you have to wait till you're healed before you help somebody? Am I missing a chapter? Am I missing something? Excuse me? Do we have to wait till you're all repaired and happy and you have everything you want and your soulmate and all your stuff and all your success before you decide that you're willing and able to help another person, to be of service? Do we have to wait till you have a trauma and you're crawling on your knees and then decide, you know what? Now that I'm just got my belly full of everything I've ever wanted, now I think as my retirement, I'm going to go help someone as a hobby. Because that's the theme of the New Age. Service as hobby. Well, I've got news for you. That doesn't work. And that is not good enough. You are called to service because that is the nature of light. And light goes where it's dark. You don't get to choose. You don't get to say, I'm not comfortable, it's not good enough, and I'm simply going to pray and cry and weep and whine. Oh, stop it. Stop it. This is the mansion where you start looking at what is required of you. And part of it is genuinely to look at suffering. And to look at the fact you're going to suffer. But what is worthy suffering? And that is a rich question. There's unworthy suffering that comes from sheer foolishness. From wanting to get what you want, knowing that you're being directed elsewhere. And then there's worthy suffering. I simply have to go through this. And that's called understanding endurance. This is something you've got to endure, so enter into silence. Enter into stamina. Find your spiritual backbone. Don't expect to be rewarded with all kinds of lights and mystical experiences and an easy path in life because you've made one rough decision on earth, because you've had one trauma. You're going to be rewarded with all kinds of wonderful things. Why should you be rewarded? Because you've had a bad day in earth school. Where did that come from? I've had so many rough experiences. I'm sure I'm due for a nice one now. Where on earth did such juvenile thinking come from? No. This should tell you I need to go inside, not run away from my pain. I need to enter it. I'm not going to go find out who's responsible for why I'm hurting. Who did this to me? No. I'm going in. I'm going in. Because this pain is an invitation that says, come on, in you go. Let's go. In you go. I'm not going to fear walking in and saying, I hurt. Why do you hurt? Because I feel so abandoned. All right. Let's discover you're not. Let's discover you feel that your heart is shattered. And let's find out that there's deep and profound love on the other end. But will I be loved? Wait till you find out. You'll be loved even more because you discover that you can love those you never thought you can love. This isn't about your suffering unnecessarily. This is about you discovering your own limitations to love. But what about all those people who've hurt me? So what about them? They've done you a tremendous favor. What about all the people you've hurt who are in therapy? Beating pillows and screaming how you've betrayed them. What about them? What about your own shadow and jealousy? What about your vicious temper? What about your capacity to break your word? When you are so, so angry. What about your capacity to do damage? You need to look at this. This is why you go into your darkness. Right here. Because you need to say, I can be that person. That's me. I can be that person. And when you are facing yourself, you say, God, put me in their skin. From now on, you pray like this. You say, that person I can't forgive, put me in their skin. Let me be that person for a day. Put me in their skin. Let me walk in their fear. You pray for their memories. You pray for their heartaches. And you carry those. You become them. And then you let your hatred and resentment come back, and let's see if you can carry it. And it won't stick. That is a rigorous prayer. And you'll suffer through that one, make no mistake. It'll break you in half. That is a mystic's prayer. And afterwards, you are cleansed. And then the very thought of holding such negative feelings toward another person becomes anathema. You can't do it anymore. That is a cleansing. That is illumination. That's what's at the end of this. If you run backwards and you say, I simply have to find out, why did they hurt me? What? No. You pray, why were they so hurt? And you go into them. And you say, all right, this is going to hurt me for a bit, but it's my only way through this. Has the other way worked? No. And it never will. It's crime solving, and it has never worked, and it never will. It simply satisfies the ego. In this sixth mansion, Teresa gives you discipline. Discipline, rules, and wisdom. Rules and wisdom. And it's rigorous because you cannot pursue light without learning how to carry it, without learning how to manage it, and getting over the naivete that the journey of enlightenment is a journey of peace, is a journey of tranquility. That's the last thing it is. It's a journey of truth. But since when is truth tranquility? It's a journey of wisdom, but wisdom demands action. And it is not a journey of self-serving where you run away from humanity. You run toward it. It is a journey preparing you to be a mystical activist wherever you stand on this earth. It is not a journey that prepares you to scream, well, now I have to go open a spa and open a business and do this and that. Those are your dreams. This is a journey where you, in your prayers every day, say, what is the guidance? What is the guidance? Now, what is the discipline? What does she say? She suffered a great deal because what happened to her along the way, and this applies to you, which is why I always bring her back, is that she suffered great criticism as her journey of illumination became so obvious. She became the target of attack. That type of thing is likely to happen to anyone whose light begins to shine. And that's just a fact. And there are many people who are mystics out of monasteries who, once they begin to carry the light among us, draw to them obstacles. She did. And she carried it well. She carried it like a genius, which is what she was. And one of the jewels of wisdom that she always knew was, don't expect others to praise you. And if you go about that, expecting others to admire you for your own interior life, you deserve what's coming to you because you've invited the devil to your door. This is why she and every great spiritual master again and again says, walk with humility. Now, I have to introduce a subject here in this mansion that she mentions in several, but she highlights here. Uncomfortable topic for this contemporary spiritual culture of ours. And yet it is essential and it must be discussed. It is a topic that has been banned from the contemporary spiritual world out of its naivete. But I will not ban it because it is essential. And that is the topic of evil. It must be discussed. The subject of evil was banned when we emerged in the 60s, absolutely enthralled with what was then called the New Age, which we rightly can't refer to it as anymore because it's middle-aged and it needs to be retired, I might add. But what we did was we became enchanted, again, with the archetype of angels, in the presence of angels. We just love to name them and make up things about angels and act as if we can access these divine beings as casually as we can our next door neighbor, which is offensive to the sacred. If you look at any holy literature, no one would dare so approach the great archangels. They approached you, and they blinded you first, lest you look upon them with unholy eyes. They were messengers from God. You didn't call them and command and demand messages from them. They came only bearing messages from God. We've reduced them to entertainment, and we've put them under our service. That is sacrilege. And in the meantime, we've banned any discussion of their dark polar opposites called demons. There are no such things as demons. There are only angels. Oh, really? Is that so? So you only like the sun, but there's no moon. I understand in your world there's no moon. There aren't any demons because I just can't accept them. That's just like an intellectual no-no. But you like angels. Yes, absolutely. That's just fine with me because I like all light and no darkness. Not in my world. And in my world, I ban TV, news, newspapers, any form that upsets my little world of light. Why, I don't have a shadow. These people live in La La Land. And they are naive. And the last thing they have is a capacity to proceed toward deep, true self-knowledge. Now, Teresa refers to the presence of evil at all times. She always says, be on guard. And that intrigues me because I thought, what does she mean by the presence of evil? What does she mean by that? Now, just as an aside, I mean, the mystics, like Padre Pio, etc., they oftentimes spoke of battling with the devil. We don't need to go there, but I just have to tell you as an aside, they always spoke about that. But if we were to identify the presence of evil, we would say, the way I would interpret that for you today, in very practical, grounded terms, is that evil refers to your vulnerable spots that get highlighted when you least need them to be highlighted, when your guard is down. Let me give you examples. All of us have weaknesses. All of us do. We all have places in us, hot buttons, where we know we can lose our power, where we can hemorrhage. We all have places where the prayer, lead us not into temptation, really applies. Those are the places where we can be seduced into violating our interior contracts with the divine. Here's a little sample. One of the recommendations, one of the disciplines of a second mansion work is to articulate truly before God, these are my conscious beliefs. This is my commitment to truth. I fully acknowledge that judgment of another is against your teachings. And I am now living by this code. I hold myself accountable to this code. And I will self-reflect on how well I live by this. Now, to offer that, I declare I will live at that altitude of consciousness, is to set yourself up. Okay? You're going to set yourself up. And Teresa would say, evil, the energy, the essence, would present itself when you are in the energy field or in the setting of someone most likely that hits your hot button. The thoughts that will just pour through you will be the worst judgmental thoughts you could possibly have. And they won't stop. And maybe when you go home, you will be 3 times, 10 times as haunted by them. And they simply won't stop. You won't be able to turn the voice off. and they'll get exaggerated and twisted, and they'll hit your paranoia, and they'll build like some kind of great big huge monster inside of you, a great big huge reptile. And someone will say to you, what's wrong with you? All this person said was, but not in you anymore. In you, it's now become a three-act drama that just keeps playing with an endless curtain call. That's what Teresa would say is the work of the demon. She's not referring to apparitions at night like Halloween. She's referring to the clever subtleties of the interior self that make you sink into the lowest form of personal behavior, to act and violate your interior code, to act against the code of, unless my actions serve the highest good, I'm not doing it. And you find yourself serving the lowest, and you realize I've gone in service to darkness. This is seduction. And I will tell you, you are never far from it. Never. Never, never. Teresa says, stay humble. Never tell yourself you have reached a point where you are incapable of any negative act, because you are not. And the moment you think you are is the moment evil shows up. And all of our social mythic adages teach us the bigger we are, the harder we fall. One of the central questions you will have on the journey is, what's my voice and what's God's? Where do I stop? Where does God begin? How do I know? The journey of excavating your reptiles is the journey of discovering God's voice. You have to go through your own methods of seducing yourself. You have to go through your own ways of creating chaos, private agendas, the way you talk to yourself to get away with things, the way you rationalize things. You have to identify the voice of your fears, and through this journey of finding your inauthentic voice, you find your authentic one. But you already know the authentic. You already know, for example, that gut instinct at the deep organic level of the divine, the one in your gut, the one, for example, that hits you when you know something is wrong. As you're listening to this, every one of you can relate to the feeling of knowing something's wrong with somebody you are in a deeply intimate relationship with, whether that's a child, a lover. And when they say to you, no, it isn't, there's nothing wrong. And you know they're not telling you the truth, which is a polite way of saying they're lying. You know it. Where do you know it? You don't know it in your eardrum. You don't feel it in your elbow. You sense it way in your gut. Now that is an authentic voice. So let's start there. You do have a sense of what is authentic, of what is absolutely core voice, organic divinity, versus your own mind. Because if you start telling yourself, you know what, there's nothing wrong, there really is nothing wrong, you know what it's like to try and talk yourself out of to try and seduce, sedate, repress the authentic voice. And you know you can't do it. So you see, you really do have a deep connection with that voice that you can't turn off. It's not possible. It is absolutely not possible. Now, those are the seeds that you're going to water and you're going to grow. Those are the seeds. So you already have the voice. You already have it. Now let's examine the types of mystical experiences that it's possible to have. And of course, in truth, there are probably any number of types of mystical experiences, and yet to have a sense of what the interior playing field is like is certainly a wonderful, wonderful advantage. It's a wonderful advantage. And Teresa took great pains to articulate the interior world because, you know, so often people will say, I was terrified by what happened to me. Why would you be terrified of your journey? What's to be terrified? I'll tell you what you want to be terrified of not having your soul open. That is something to fear. Now, Teresa's journeys just continue to progress, but let me remind you, they didn't start when she was 10. She was in her early 40s, and they didn't happen 24 hours a day, and they came on spontaneously and inconveniently. She'd be in the kitchen. She would be in the chapel, wherever she was. She would be overcome by a moment of quietude, a moment of spiritual sweetness, experiences of a deeper and more profound quality continued to happen to her. She was clear to indicate that as her soul became an expanded vessel, it could become a greater container of light. She had experiences at the deepening level of what she would call holy rapture. Holy rapture was the experience of being spontaneously lifted into an altered state of consciousness, taken away from her body, and the container of her senses became absorbed into the presence of God. These holy raptures came upon her spontaneously and often included levitation, because her body became more light-filled than the physical form. And so the, shall we say, spiritual chemistry of the body was shifted so that there was more kairos, more present time than chronos, earth time. And so she was lifted. She ascended. The story of Jesus, the Christos after his resurrection, the ascension. There is more timelessness in you than time. You are filled with eternity as opposed to this temporal world. She said, I've heard of certain people whose bodies were even raised up with their spirits. Do you think that the soul has any idea what's going on? Where she's headed or who's doing this to her? No. When this rapid movement first lifts the soul away, she cannot know for sure that the rapture comes from God. Does the soul have any power to resist this transport? None whatsoever. In fact, resistance only makes matters worse. The soul has no power to stop this. As the mystical experiences took over Teresa, all she could do was surrender into them again and again. I will tell you that she said to her nuns, if I start lifting, pull me down, grab me. To be clear, she didn't go up to the ceiling. She just sort of hovered. But nonetheless, she would go into states where she was not reachable. Your five senses are completely deadened. You could scream, "Teresa, Teresa," and there was no response at all, because you are completely gone. You are completely absorbed into the consciousness of God. She would say in some of her experiences that God shared secrets with her. The secrets of the divine were revelations about the nature of the divine, were revelations about the nature of love, about the nature of the whole of the cosmos. These revelations are not something that could be articulated or languaged, but just experienced. It is incomprehensible to think that there's such a conversation as simply being given light, and that that light simply expands you in the very experience of the nature of God. And that was her secret. I am experiencing the nature of God. And that's all I can tell you, because I can't communicate the nature of God in words. There are no words. The nature of God does not fit into a word. The only thing she could do was say, "Here, follow this path. Come into your own light and experience what I'm telling you about." She says there's a type of holy rapture in which the soul isn't even in prayer, and she's struck by a word she remembers or hears about that makes the spark of soul yearn for God and burst into a flame so entirely that it's like a phoenix. She said this happens when it happens. And you could be anywhere, and it happened to her all the time, where she would be someplace and a word would be dropped into her consciousness. And she would just start on fire within. And she would be in a conversation, and all of a sudden, light and illumination, a fire would hit. And what it would be like would be given an essence of the divine in pure form, as if it was the pure grace of God, pure mystical grace. We're talking a level of interior experience of the divine, where she burst into mystical flame inside, that her own soul burst into fire. And that's the best way she could explain it. And she says, this will happen to you. And the reason you pray, she says, is because you have to use that fire. You have to use it. You have to take the fire and give it away. You have to express the fire. You have to go into ecstasy and simply let the fire move through you into the whole of humanity. The fire is not for you. The fire flows through you to others, or you will implode. You will implode. When people study intuition, it's to serve themselves. Hey, and that's fine. Believe me. But a mystic is called to serve others. You see the whole different realm, which is why it's known as a calling. You are called, and you come, and your inner life becomes ferociously rigorous. But it is so exquisite when you get into the rigors, because you realize this rigorous interior life is exquisite. to be disciplined at that level. It is exquisite to have such a structured interior life with the soul. To get past the point where you are thrown against the wall by the chemical needs of your body, where that no longer is your anguish. You're done with that. Because your soul becomes such a strong force that your body becomes subject to the commands of your soul. Teresa also talks about visions. Visions do happen, and they are very much a part of the mystical life. She says a true vision is not fleeting and it's not volatile. The last thing a soul is thinking about is that she is about to see something holy. Again, a vision is a spontaneous occurrence. She says, during a true vision, a powerful stirring occurs, and without any effort on the soul's part, wisdom overcomes unconsciousness. The sacred descending, knowing full well that the very force and grace of the sacred encountering your soul would change you, alter you, bring you to the altar, bring you closer to divine intimacy forever. A vision is a sacred experience, not a casual one, that imparts a depth of wisdom. She says an intellectual vision is another type of vision in which the soul feels the presence of God right next to her. Where you can sense, I have the presence of something sacred and holy standing beside me. I feel it, I sense it, and it is coming through my intellect. And that is a genuine vision. And you may not necessarily see it, but it penetrates with a full force of command. And you know it is not your intellect that is now working within your intellect. It is a parallel intellect that operates within your intellect, a companion intellect, in dialogue with your intellect. This is that vision. Before we go into the rooms, let me add one very significant piece of wisdom. And that is her reference to secrets. Teresa was very clear that there's a phenomenon about secrets and that they seduce us. And that the imparting of secrets, like, for example, what I said earlier, the divine transferring a secret revelation to you, actually requires a soul with great stamina. It actually requires that your soul contain a ferocious amount of stamina to contain a vision or a secret. Very few people can do that. Very few. Most people can't keep their mouth shut when even their best friend said, I beg you, keep this to yourself. I can't carry this in me alone anymore. May I confide in you? Will you promise me to keep this to yourself? And you look at your best friend or even a close friend and you say, absolutely. And within 3 seconds of their leaving the room, you're on the phone telling someone else, breaking your word to someone whose eyes you looked directly into and said, sure, I'll keep it to myself. You can't carry the weight of a secret. You're saying, oh, a secret is too heavy for me. And it's just a little gossip secret. And now this is major league. Now we're talking of vision, the sharing of high voltage divinity placed into your soul so that you could carry that in mystery Who knows why God gives such visions to people and then says silence? Who knows? Maybe it's because at this point, humanity's on this course. Don't let them know. Pray it so it can change. Put light into this. This is a darkness. How strong is your soul? You have to find that out. You have to know that. How much can you carry? If you can't even carry a secret from a beloved friend who says, can you please, can I confide in you? You have to look at that. My God, I can't even carry the tiny, tiny weightlessness of a secret of a beloved friend. That was too much for me. And I had to break my word to someone I love while screaming and not forgiving people who've done that to me. Secrets have a great deal to do with why you have to build a soul with stamina. You want to make contact with your inner light. That's what this is about. You want to proportion this journey appropriately to your life, to who you are, for your own interior world, to have a deeper, more authentic journey into your soul. Now, we're going to go into the rooms. You are now in the corridor of the sixth mansion for deep work on developing your essential deep wisdom in preparation for managing illumination. So as you walk down this corridor that looks like a long library, you're going to walk into a room on your right, and as you walk into this room, this whole room is paneled in walnut. And you can see this is a room for work. You can feel it coming. So walk into this room and sit in a wonderful, comfortable leather chair. And there's a letter. Open your letter. But before you read the letter, I want you to feel yourself in this room stretching. You are stretching to the full length of the walls, the full height of the ceiling. I want you to stretch right into your soul. You stretch out and feel, this whole room is my soul. I am fully in my soul. And your question is, what is the quality of my stamina? What is my soul made of? What type of stamina do I have in me? Could I contain a secret? Do I break easily? Could I contain a vision? A truth? Could I maintain silence? A spiritual devotion? A practice? What's the bar for me with God? If I were to make my practice one truth at a time, to say, I will take a truth and make this my practice for a month, and then come in here and reflect. How am I doing? What are my contradictions? What is my difficulty with maintaining this truth? I will take the truth, I see you in all people. Because you are in all people. And I will work to see you in all people. And when I can't, I will come in this room and say, I need stamina because that one is difficult. And I am easily distracted. I have no discipline. That is what's true. And I must build discipline or I will never proceed. I wander here, I wander there, I promise myself, and I break promises all the time. I must learn to make a promise and stay, and stick, and proceed. I have a great deal of work to do, to build my soul with stamina. And this is the room I come to, for self-examination, for self-reflection. This is the room to build stamina. And so I visualize lighting a candle in my soul that will never go out. A candle that contains the stamina that I know is in my soul, and it will never go out. Never. I want you to take a deep breath and feel yourself walking out of that room and back into the hall. And as you walk down the hall, there's a room on your left. Walk into that room. This is a room where there is a chair with a strong, strong back, and you're going to sit in that chair and put your feet on the ground. And this is a room for deep, penetrating self-reflection. This is a room where you are going to go deeply into your soul. This is a room where you ask yourself, is this my voice or is this yours, dear God? Is this my voice or is this yours? Am I listening to my shadow or am I following my light? Is this your voice or is this mine? And you're going to take that question and you're going to run it from your feet through to your knees. Is it your voice or is it mine? Then imagine taking that question and running it all the way up to your groin and your hips and your solar plexus. Are you speaking to me organically? How does my gut feel? Are you talking to me through my gut? Or am I speaking to myself? Am I fighting what you're saying to me? Is that what's really going on? Because you are always talking to me. You are always talking to me. So either I am always listening or always fighting. Which is it? In this room, my only decision is to listen or to do battle. That's it. What is it you want of me? What are you telling me? What shall I receive? Let it be revealed. Don't look for great, big, huge life direction. Don't look for what should I do next? Where do I belong? And if you go there, you say, look, I simply can't pray without pride. And if you don't hear your great, big, huge direction, you say, I'm simply here. And all is well. And if you feel conflict, say to yourself, I'm fighting you. Give me the grace to open. Give me the grace not to fear. Give me the grace. Illuminate me. I receive your light. I receive your light. Amen. Now I want you to feel yourself lifting off that chair and walking out of the room. And now you're going to walk down the hall and you're going to go into a room on your right. What a soft, beautiful room. Shut the door and you look around and think, what a gorgeous room. It feels like it's sparkling and glistening with crystal. It is an exquisite room. And you see this absolutely beautiful, beautiful chair, and I want you to sit in it, and it leans back and your feet go up and your back is being massaged and your feet are being massaged, and this beautiful warm light begins to shine. And the light becomes brighter and brighter and brighter. And the room fills with an exquisite fragrance of jasmine. And the air is soft and misty. And you hear, "Be still and know that I am God. And I have come into your chamber of healing. This is your sacred room. This is your chamber of healing. And I have come to help you heal." In this room, release that which anguishes you. Release it. Not through your mind, through your soul. Go deep, deep, and release. Not through your mind, not through your heart. Just let go. What you need to pray for, God, take it out of me. Take it out. Cleanse my heart. Cleanse my gut. If you have illness in you, feel that light go right into your cell tissue and remove it. This is a room where there is no time. Let that time-filled element of illness be burned out of you with grace. Burn it out. Release it. Let divine grace move right through your head, right through your eyes, right through your brain, right through your neck, down your spine. Fill your soul. And feel yourself just being lifted. There is no form anymore. There is no body. You are being lifted right out of your body and into the arms of God. There is such lightness. Be still and know you are with God. There is no form. You are fully, fully out of your body. And the embrace of all of your pain is gone. And disease released. The suffering is gone. And in this beautiful room, the grace that is flowing through you, you are releasing to those you love. Embrace them within you. Take them into your soul. And take those you find difficult to love into your soul. And then send this grace deeply into our beloved world. This is a room rich within your sixth mansion that is filled with the light of healing. with a beautiful grace. And now imagine that you are being put right back into your body, but the body is free of pain and stiffness and illness, and it is for you to believe that. Release it. It is healed. Be still and know you are with God. Amen. And now as I walk you through to a final little courtyard at the end of your sixth mansion, I want you to dwell on the question, am I the goal or is God? Am I the goal or is God? This is a question to keep in your soul. Here in the sixth mansion, this is a question always, always to remind yourself of when you feel distracted, when you feel yourself needing to focus. Am I the goal or is God? And now we'll leave the sixth mansion with this prayer. I am a channel of grace. As I leave the sixth mansion, grace surrounds me and protects me. I enter my life and the world under the blessing of God, and I remain open to receive guidance from my soul. I am a channel of grace.